When Miguel was 2 years old, his parents divorced. His father, due to addiction, was in and out of his life and in and out of jail. Their relationship had been strained, and it all resurfaced at the birth of his daughter. Although his father wasn't present, Miguel found a mentor and a father figure in a man who would change who he was and help him become the man he is today. Hi, I'm Leilani Langdon, the host of What's Your Story, a place where we journey through the lives of others in order to inspire you, the listener, to know, own, and share your story. So make sure to lean in as you join us on today's journey. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of What's Your Story Live. We are on episode 4, and I could not be more excited than to be on tonight live with you. It was my birthday weekend, and I took the weekend off. I went away, and my husband did an amazing job at getting me a little getaway. I had a great weekend, birthday weekend, but then I came back, and it was sheer chaos. Like, do you know, like, it's almost like I needed the respite, because when I came back, the baby got sick, our car broke down. I mean, it was just one thing after another. So I was just grateful for that time away. But my kids and I watch movies every Sunday night. One of the movies that we have watched a lot has been Soul. Not more than Encanto, because Encanto trumps all. But one of the things that was so powerful today in remembering, and in that time where I was not feeling great, and I wanted to share with you guys, because I think it's such a powerful reminder for anybody at any stage of life. So at the end of Soul, you know, Joe Gardner, who's he's passionate about jazz. He has been looking for this big break, this big moment in his life to culminate, you know, making it, you know, and reaching his goal and succeeding. And he finally goes through all of these things. You know, he dies, he comes back, he gets a second chance. And at the end, he finally gets to play with Dorothea Williams, right? This big jazz artist. And, you know, they have an amazing time. And at the end of the show, they walk outside and everybody's like, all right, I'll see you tomorrow. And he's like, hold on a second, like something is missing. And he's looking around and he's like, so what happens now? And she says something that I want to read to you, because it's such a powerful analogy, that one that I think would be so helpful for us. So she says, her exact statement, let me pull it up here. She says, I heard this story about a fish. He swims up to an older fish and says, I'm trying to find this thing they call the ocean. The ocean? The older fish says, that's what you're in right now. This, says the young fish, this is water. What I want is the ocean. And it was a powerful moment and a reminder that so many of us go through life wanting to reach that thing, whatever that thing is, dream, purpose, a goal, a career goal, a familial goal, an amount of money, an amount of success. And we often miss the fact that there's so much joy, and there's so much purpose, and there's so many miracles that happen on the way to attaining and reaching that particular goal. And that the reality is that when we get there, we often find that it has left us unfulfilled. It's not as exciting as we thought it would be. And so today I want to encourage you that it's often on the journey towards the thing we're pursuing that we find fulfillment, that we find meaning, that we find understanding, and that where the miracles happen. So today I want to remind you of that. All right. So without further ado, I'm going to bring on our guest for tonight, Miguel.
Hey.
Hey, Miguel. How are you doing?
I am well. Happy belated birthday.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
It was amazing. But Miguel, tell us who you are.
Sure. I am an individual who is from some humble beginnings here in Rochester, New York. My mother, she migrated from Puerto Rico when she was about 18 years old. And when she moved to Rochester, it was there that she met an individual whom is my father. And I am the second oldest of six children. So pretty big family. Yeah,
yes. It's a big one.
And yeah, so that's where the genesis of me starts, really, actually, although that's kind of the root origin of my story. But really, for me, it began when I was 15 years old, where I met a pastor who really just started pouring into my life. And that's really where everything kind of changed for me.
So I'm excited then. I'm excited. You're getting some hellos here. So let's just jump right in, Miguel. So go ahead and tell us, what's your story?
Sure. Well, you know, thank you, first of all, for the space, the opportunity. Thank you for everyone who's connected, who would take an interest. It, my story, again, I'm part of this big family, but part of this Latin community. And one of the things within the Latin community is that we don't talk about our emotions. We don't talk about our feelings, even more so if you're a guy. If you're a guy, you don't talk about your feelings. It's just not kosher. It's not what we do. And so, you know, for me, it has been a journey to get to a point where I can be honest with myself in those emotions. And what really hit me hard was the moment that my first daughter was born. When my first daughter was born, that was the moment where all of these emotions that I had just compartmentalized and tossed to a corner, those were the moments that was the moment that it really just started coming back. You know, when you do spring cleaning, that's when you realize, wait a minute, I got some junk that I've been storing up that I don't need no more.
Right.
And it was at that moment, you know, particularly one night I was putting my daughter to sleep, and I remember we were living in this this two-bedroom apartment, my wife and I, and we had our first daughter, and there I was trying to put her to bed, and she fell asleep in my arms. And in that moment, I began to ask myself, why would someone not want to be in this? Why would someone not want to be with their child? Why would someone walk away? I mean, but it hit me like a ton of bricks. Wow. And I will admit to you, I tried to ignore those feelings. And when I tried to ignore them, it built in me resentment, frustration, irritation, and more questions. It really wasn't until the moment that my mother passed away when I reached to my father and I said, you know, when my mom was in the hospital, I was with her. I shut my whole life down and I just went to the hospital with her. Wow. And I was fearful because at that moment, I said to him, at that moment, I don't think I would do the same thing for you.
Wow.
And that's heavy. That's real. And that was my opening line after some years of silence between he and I.
Wow. Wow. And, go ahead. Sorry.
No, yeah, go ahead. This is your show.
No, I didn't want to interrupt because you were going there and I didn't want to interrupt that. What was his reaction?
He, you know, we took a moment of pause and he was going to begin to say something and I interrupted him. And I said, I want you to know that I come into this space, into this relationship with no expectations, because to be honest, previously we had tried to make it work, but there was so much expectations, right? The expectations of, man, I wish you were there when I was 10. I wish you were there when I graduated. I wish you were there when I met my wife. I wish you were there when these, and all of these thoughts of unfulfilled realizations. And it created in me expectations that really, it's no fault of his, but he was never going to meet. And even when he attempted, he wasn't going to be able to satisfy that little kid in me. And so in this instance, I said, you know what? I want you to know that I come here with no expectations whatsoever. If you call, great. If you don't call, great. If you visit, great. If you don't visit, great. If you want to be a grandfather, great. If you don't, great. Whatever it is that you decide to do, great. However, I would want to be there if you're on your sick bed. And right now, I don't think I could be, just because I didn't feel that sense of connection. That actually opened up the door where he could then begin to tell me his story, a story that I was not familiar with, a story that had to do with addiction, abuse, adoption, things that I said, wait a minute, I had no idea. And that all started for him at a very young age. When I began to hear his story, it made me understand what I could not understand when I was holding my daughter young, which is, it's not that he didn't want to be there. It's that he couldn't be there because what I needed, he couldn't provide. And it was that moment that I was able to realize that. Now, getting in tune with my emotions, has helped me not just within my marriage, not just with him, not just as a leader, but also as I continue to grow in the things that are before me, as I continue to grow in what I call my God-given purpose, and as I continue to use the God-given talents.
So what was your experience with him growing up? What was it that led to these feelings of resentment that maybe you stuffed down and ignored because that's what was culturally acceptable, you know?
Yeah. So my father and my mother divorced before I was two. My mother remarried, and she remained married until her passing day. So she was married for about 26 years.
Wow.
My father, on the other hand, struggled with addiction. Mm-hmm. And that addiction not only had him coming in and out of reality, but in and out of my life and in and out of jail. And oftentimes it was that same addiction that just drew him away. And so even when he was physically present, it wasn't emotionally connecting. Mm-hmm. So there are a few memories that we do have where we can say, hey, remember when we did this? But those are far and few. And so it was the absence of those memories of not being able to be pushed in the playground by him or learning how to ride a bike with him. Those were things that, you know, I'm very grateful that I had a stepfather who took a role to be there. But while I'm grateful, that wasn't his role, that I was, you know, and those were the things that I had just kind of left it alone. I was like, well, at least I have him. But to be honest here, when my mother passed away, my entire family just kind of, you know, I didn't realize how much she was the glue of that family, how much she was the glue of that household. And so then it's like, wait a minute, I had a stepfather, but now he's gone. And so I'm still learning how to be a father, even though I have three daughters. Like, I'm still learning and trying to be a better father, be a better husband. You know, we bought a house and it's like, wait, now I got to learn how to be a plumber too. Like,
they don't tell you that when you buy a house.
Yeah, they don't tell you that. so having that point of reference, you know, of who do I go to? Right. There, it was very important for me to be able to have that relationship with my dad, because he's really been a point of reference, and not just in those things of how to be a better father, how to be a better believer, leader. I mean, but he's really been a point of really connecting towards what's ahead and maintaining that type of focus. So I can report today that our relationship is in an awesome place, but it started with the realization, which again, culturally for Hispanics, for Latins, it's like, hey, we don't talk about that. You know, it's kind of like Bruno. We don't talk about that either.
Listen, that song was so powerful because you're right. I think every family has that thing that you don't want to talk about, especially within the Hispanic culture. And I love that you touch on that because you had that double layer. It's not only just the familial culture of where we don't talk about, we're very uncomfortable with emotions, the array of emotions and talking about them, but also to be a male and to have that added pressure, right? To have to navigate all of these difficult scenarios and not have a place to express them or share them. You know, I loved when you talked about, you know, the fact that it's like, yeah, your stepfather was there and you're so grateful that he was there. But the reality is, you know, there are people that probably say, well, you know, at least you had someone, right? But, you know, tell me, you know, as a child, like, did you notice those moments, right? Like, where it's like, okay, he's here, but you wished there was your actual dad was there. What was that like? I mean,
yeah. So you know, it was an interesting thing because here's the thing: my dad, as I mentioned, he struggled with addiction, and that addiction kept him in and out. Now, my stepfather, he also had an addiction. He was an alcoholic, so that you know, once he got into that liquid, it was a different person, and it was in those moments where it's like, man. You know, the things he say, the things he does were very, it would penetrate. It was tough to digest as a kid. And of course, that's when you're like, man, you know, I wish I had a hero at this moment. And that's really that moment where, you know, wait, I have a dad. Oh, but wait, even if I called him, he wouldn't be here. And those were those moments where it was real for me to be able to distinguish, this isn't my dad. Even though, to be honest, early on in my childhood, I loved him like a dad to the point where I was like, forget it. My dad ain't never going to be there. So I might as well change my last name. And it was a real dialogue that I had had about taking those steps. But then again, there was those moments where it's like this, even if I love him like a dad, he just ain't. And you know, to me, the concept of a stepfather is not for someone to be stepped on, but rather someone that would help you step into what others could not. And so I hold individuals who are stepfathers in a high regard, stepmothers in a high regard, because it's not an easy job to take a role that others could not take, rather because of their life circumstances or whatever happened. They really take that position of saying, I'm going to help this person, this child, step into what they have to. So I take that in high regard. But the reality is, on the other side, as a child, as the person who's having the step parent, there are these moments that cannot be ignored, which is like, that's right, I forgot. You are here, but it's not, it's just a deeper connection that that you know is missing.
Yeah, like a void. So tell me, you know, you mentioned that you were, you know, you're putting your daughter to sleep and all of these emotions kind of came creeping up, you know, did you recognize what they were in the moment? Like, how did you come to a place coming from the culture, being a man, coming from the culture that you came from? How are you even able to start beginning to put words to these feelings, right? And to be okay allowing yourself to make the shift, because I think a lot of us can feel those emotions, but the way that we deal with them may not be healthy, especially if we were never taught or we never saw how to deal with them in a healthy way.
I don't know how I knew necessarily, but I just remember putting her down to bed and just saying, you know, growing up, there was a show, which I'm sure many have seen, which is The Fresh Prince, right?
Yeah, of course.
And there's this episode that as a kid resonated so heavy with me. There's this episode where Will Smith's father finally arrives in the picture and he makes these promises to him, right? And at the end, there's this powerful scene where Will and Uncle Phil, and he's like, how come he don't want me?
Yes, crying. And, yeah.
Listen, that to me, I can remember watching that episode. I'm like, how come he don't want me? But it's those scenes and, you know, fantastic that art has the ability to really just help you tap into something that otherwise you wouldn't be able to. But I think things like that, shows like that, episodes like that really kind of laid the seed. And, you know, when that moment came that I was putting my daughter to bed, it was just that feeling of, how come he don't want me? And so it was being able to draw back to that. I really resonated with that scene because it was that moment of how come he don't want me? How come he wasn't there? And that really allowed me to put voice to it.
So what was the next step for you? Like, how did you then take the next step to say, you know, I'm not going to perpetuate the same things that I saw and the same ways that I was raised? How am I going to be different? Like, what was that? How did that happen for you?
So, you know, after I realized that there was these emotional situations, you know, I started talking to my wife about it, but I'm not going to sit here and say, you know, hey, I quickly called him. No, it took some time before I made that leap. And while there were these moments that I tried to make the connection, as I previously mentioned, I would always go into it with expectations. So, you know, it wasn't until really about 2016 when my mother passed away where I was able to then communicate. You know, my daughter now is 8 years old, you know, and I have a second daughter who is 6 year old and a 2 month old baby. So a 2 year old baby, I'm sorry. I took her way back there. but I say all that to just bring content that it wasn't like I came to the realization. I said, okay, now I'm ready to make a change. No, it was okay. I came to the realization and then I was like, okay, I'm still not ready to talk to him. I'm still not ready to make the steps that I know that would require to actually be able to dialogue. And so it took some years, some time for me to be able to get to a place where I had no expectations. Now, once I got to that place, I was able to openly have a communication and say, hey, there's no expectations here. So by the end of year one, where we sat down and it was like, hey, you know, we probably could have done better of getting together. We could have done this. We could have done that. And I was like, no. Not that we could have, because I'm not expecting anything. What I would say is, this year is behind us. Next year, if you feel like we can do better, then do better.
And so
by just cleaning the slate, by just here, there it is. Boom. No expectations. That's it. Yeah. If you know, and then obviously as the relationship began to just draw a little closer, then it's like, okay, now let's define expectations. If I text you, I expect you to text me back. If I call you, I expect you to call me back. And if you call me, I will call you back. And if you text me, I will text you back. Right. So initiating from a place of no expectations and then being able to move forward to say, okay, now that we're getting serious, now that we are really getting together here and creating a bond, let's start defining what the expectations are so that we can keep that trajectory, as opposed to just pulling back and saying, when you were 10, you never did this. It just, at this point, it's like, bruh, it don't matter. It just doesn't matter.
You know, I loved that you talked about earlier, and it connects to what you just said, but I love that, you know, you had a moment where you and your father were able to have this honest conversation and this courageous conversation about his story. And, you know, I think a lot of us as children, we don't often recognize the struggles that our parents have gone through as a result of their own trauma and the result of their own childhood experiences. And, you know, you can't do better if you don't know better. And that's just the truth, right? And as children, we don't have the ability to understand that. But I love that you said that you were open enough to allow him to share his story. And in doing that, you were able to see him from a different perspective. You were able to see your story and your own childhood from a different lens. Not that it takes away from the trauma or the pain or the frustration or the days that he wasn't there, but it allows it to give a different meaning to those moments, right?
Exactly. And
then to then be able to have that moment and say, you know what, from here on out, we're not going to dwell on what was. Let's focus on what is. And I love that perspective, because I think it really, it empowers the ability, like you said, to start from a clean slate, to be able to say, we're on equal playing field now. Like,
right.
We both can play a role that is different from what was. So what can we do now moving forward? I love that. You mentioned that you said at one point, I need a hero. So tell me about that. Tell me about that experience for you. Do you feel like, you mentioned at 15 interacting with someone that changed your life? Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah. So when I was graduating, I think we're going middle school to high school time. My mother made a decision to move to Puerto Rico. My mother actually bought the house that she grew up in.
Oh, and that's exciting.
So, yeah. So she made the decision. She's moving to Puerto Rico. At this point, I'm 14, about to be 15. And she says, okay, you know, school is about to end. Summer is coming. I'm going to be leaving to Puerto Rico. What are you going to decide to do? Me and my older brother, who are from, you know, from this first marriage, she asks us both, what are you two going to do? You're old enough where you can make the decision. Do you want to come with me to Puerto Rico, or do you want to go with your father? And, you know, I made the decision of kind of now or never. And I said, well, this is a good opportunity for me to actually get to know him. And so I decided to move with him. What I did not know were the burdens or the weight of the responsibility that was on his shoulders. Because it's one thing to say, hey, I want you to live with me, son, or me say, hey, I want to live with you, dad. That is a wonderful thing. But then after you've unpacked everything, after you say, this is your room, this is the things, then the reality sets in. Hey, what's for breakfast? Hey, where are things going to get paid from? Hey, what school do I go to? And all of these elements, which we had not interacted with before, become so real, real.
For sure.
And the weight of it, you know, really drew him to make decisions that were familiar from his past. And so those decisions, you know, I remember my mother called me and said, listen, and I don't know how she knew, but my mother was a very spiritual woman, but she called one day and she said, hey, I know things aren't going well over there. And you're going to have to leave. And I said, wait a minute. No, everything is okay. Because I was trying to preserve this possibility of a relationship. Yeah. And she said, no, I know things aren't going well. You're going to have to leave there. And I said, no, everything is okay. She said, I'm going to give you a week. I said, a week for what? She said, a week to meet me at the airport or I'm going to go over there.
No.
Now, my mother was a spiritual woman, but she was kind of like, I don't know if you've heard the Toby Ngwagwe song where he said, try Jesus, but don't try me. That was my mother. My mother was
holy.
yeah. So I knew that if by the end of the week I didn't get on the plane, she was gonna be the one getting on the plane.
Absolutely.
And so I made the move to go to Puerto Rico, and you know, I grew up knowing Spanish and the Hispanic, the Latin culture, but it just ain't the same. And it's not the same from, you know, from this perspective in Rochester, New York, to go fly over and be there on the island. It was a culture shock. It was a massive culture shock with language, with culture, with just the vernacular, the style, the smells. It was all different. A culture shock for me. But at the same time, while that was a culture shock, it helped me understand a lot of the stories that my mother, that I did not fully know. Mm. Now, it was in that time period that I started going to church, and the church that I attended to had a pastor who his name is Miguel Ayala, and Miguel was just amazing and just so pivotal in my life because he saw in me what I could not see in myself. And so he would always push me to speak in public. He would always push me to be a leader. And he would always, it almost seemed like he knew where I was going before I could even see the road.
Wow.
And he was just so pivotal on just saying, you can do this. And it really, he became more than a hero. He became really a father figure. And, you know, we found each other really in a, just a marvelous way, because he had several years earlier lost his older son, who his name was Miguel. And so it became thing where we were connected, not only by that, but his son, he had lost a son because of addiction. And we were linked in so many layers. This guy really just took a role where I was like, yo, wherever you go, I will go. No questions asked. And he took it to heart, where he would just show up and be like, I'm here to pick you up. I was like, where are we going? He said, wherever, you know. And so he would just take me with him. Aww. And we would visit people, help people. We would do service in the community. Mm. But it was that being able to see, and not just that, but he was so open with counsel, with advice, with his emotions, that subconsciously it just began to lay down a foundation. So I am as much his son as I am anyone else's.
That's amazing. Do you still have a relationship with him today?
I do. He is very pivotal to where I am right now.
Wow.
You know, the spiritual disciplines that are in my life, it was him. I mean, he's the guy who taught me how to tie a tie. And so this guy was very pivotal in my life. Yes.
So he really stepped in a moment.
Yes.
And some of the most pivotal times of your life, right? That teenage, those teenage years that are so defining for you. I love that you said that he saw in you what you couldn't see in yourself. And I think it's so important that we are able to pour into others in that same way, right? And I think we all have these moments where we see things in others and we don't say it. We don't tell people, right? We don't, you know, I think it's one thing to obviously commit to taking someone in, but just the simplicity of being able to affirm somebody or affirm what you see in somebody can be really life-changing. And in this moment, you said it was for you. There was a question that came in that I want to ask, but you know, what would you tell someone else who may have had a similar experience that has had an absent father, and you know, just isn't sure what to do or how to navigate the scenario? What would you say to them?
I would say that if you have some form of communication, Maybe you have a phone number, or email. Mm-hmm. I would say start there. Start with an email. The email is so simple because it allows you the space to say what you want to say without being interrupted. Because yeah. oftentimes people say, oh, yeah, I want to hear what you have to say. But then when you start talking, they start interrupting. obviously, in this setting, it works. Okay. Yes. In this setting, we dialoguing. But in, sure. in a setting where it's so emotional, where it's so heavy, where, yeah. you know, where you can cut the tension, it's sure. like we need to allow each other space where you talk. I'll be quiet. And then I'll be quiet and I'll let you talk. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes, because everyone, right, we're all emotional beings, because everyone's emotional and everybody wants to tell their side of what's happening. It's like, okay, I think starting with an email, which is something that I did, is like, okay, let me send out this email. Yes. That's going to open up the line of communication. When he reaches out, then we'll set a date and then we'll go in there, and I can always go ahead and use the email as a point of reference. Hey, I said on the email, this is what I mean. Let me bring further context to what I already said in the email.
Yeah.
I think that makes it so much easier. And then also being able to just go into it with no expectations, because if you go in it thinking, oh, maybe this is the moment where he's going to finally be the hero that I've been looking for, or maybe he's going to be, you know, I don't know, super dad or something. It's like, no, he's not. And my dad and I have a wonderful relationship, but we have a wonderful relationship in this stage in my life, you know, yeah. in my 30s. It wasn't great in my teens, but if I pull back to my teens, well, he wasn't there. He couldn't be there. XYZ yeah. reason. And I think understanding where we are, okay, here's where we are. Yeah. This is the stage that I'm in. Sure. Can you be a dad here? And that's not going to look like, you know, that's not going to look like what everyone else's situation looks like.
Sure.
And that's why, to me, strategy is so important, because strategy is a defined number of steps to help you have a breakthrough moment. And in order for us to implement strategy, you have to know where you are. And this is super important because, you know, Leilani, you may be 10 steps closer to your breakthrough moment, where I'm 5 or 20 steps away. Yeah. And it's like, if I stay here and compare, man, how come Leilani's so close to her breakthrough moment? Yeah. Forget it. She's in her own journey. So yeah. I think pulling back and being able to initiate a communication through an email and then go into it with no expectations, not comparing to somebody else, to say, okay, this is my dad.
Yeah.
This is the relationship we have had, but what relationship could we have? Another thing is that oftentimes people say, well, there is no relationship. And they assume that because, well, we're not talking, that there is no relationship. No, we do have a relationship. It's just not a healthy one. Right. The only way I can't have a relationship with you is if I don't know you. If I don't know you at all, then how do I have a relationship with you?
Right.
But if I know you, I have a relationship with you. It's either going to be a healthy one or a really bad one.
Right.
Right. And so I knew I had a relationship with him. Yeah. It was just a really sucky one. It was just a bad relationship. Yeah. And the only way to change that is to go in it with pure honesty, with no expectations, and being able to allow each other to say their side of the story. And so, you know, pulling back to what I said further earlier, which is when he shared his story, that gave a whole lot of understanding to my story, because, you know, it was almost like an oil spill of free will. You know, his free will just rolled over onto mine, where it shouldn't be. But it is. It just happens. And that's the way life is. But I would say for those who are in the experience, go that. Number one, start off with a simple communication, maybe via email.
Sure.
Number two, you know, go into it with no expectation. Number three, don't compare either to the past or to others.
I love that. You know, something that I may add to that, I think I would add to, I know there are people that maybe at some point they may not feel ready emotionally to take that step, right? Because that can feel like a very daunting step for somebody. And it seemed like you had been primed, you know, for that experience to take place. And it almost seemed like this experience with your mom was a catalyst for that moment, right, to happen with your dad. But I think I would, the point that I would add to everything that you said, which was, you know, amazing, like, you know, send an email, right? Start the, open the line of communication, right? Be honest, set a date to connect and give more context, go in with no expectations, right? And be willing to be open to hear their story. I think that's such a powerful thing. And then I would say somebody who maybe is not ready to do that yet is, don't be afraid to explore the hurt, right? Don't be afraid to explore the hurt before you take that step, because I think that's what causes the conflict, right? Is that there's so, like you said, right? There's so much tension and there's so much pain wrapped up in this moment, and it can oftentimes cause what you talked about, right? A lack of understanding and a lack of moving forward.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that really helped with this is early on, my wife and I, early in our marriage, we decided to go to a marriage retreat. Mm. And in this marriage retreat, one of the things that we did was that we actually did writing exercise. Mm. So just to kind of lay down the view here, you arrive to this hotel, you introduce yourself, but that's the only interaction you have with people. The rest really is these marriages pouring out their experiences and how they dealt with it through proper communication strategies.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the weekend, it's a notebook and a pen, and write your emotions out, write your feeling, write that experience, and then share it with your significant other. You know, we would switch notebooks.
Yes.
So she would read mine, I would read hers. And then whatever was really penetrating, it was like, okay, let's focus on that, because that seems to be a talking point. And so that form of being able to write out my emotions and being able to, you know, write what I think and feel, and understanding that emotions within themselves are not bad, which is something that I think we often ignore. Right? If you feel sad, angry, mad, distraught, whatever it is, while the emotion may feel sucky, right? It may be feeling bad, it within itself is not bad.
No.
And so it's okay for you to have that emotion. What's not okay is the action or attitude you take with that emotion.
I love that. Yep.
Understanding that has not only helped me in my marriage, but it also helped in a situation like this of being able to get with him and say, okay, you know what? I'm okay that I felt bad. I'm okay that I didn't feel like you were there. I'm okay with that feeling, even though it sucked. It didn't feel good, but I'm okay with that feeling. And I understand that having that feeling is not bad. So for those who are not there yet emotionally, it's okay.
Yes.
It's okay to not be okay.
Okay.
We just have to get to a place to understanding that. Hey, I don't feel good. That's okay.
Yes.
But find people who understand that, and
people
that will actually pour back into you.
Yes.
You know, recently I had an experience where I felt like I was in a crossroad, really. and I just reached out to my people, to my network. Mm. And I said, here's how I'm feeling. Here's why. And this is what I'm thinking about doing. And I'm going to tell you something, Leilani. They talked me off the edge, because I was, you know, God's still working in me, Leilani.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, of course.
So I would say find those people. You need those people who that are not just cheerleaders, but people who will be honest enough to say, hey, you could do better than this.
That's so powerful and reaffirming, I think, as people are listening, to the power of community. We were not meant to do this life alone, right? It is so important, especially when we are walking in our God-given purpose. And so, Miguel, I loved how you broke down the idea of strategy. So I need you to do that again. But then also, Marcy says, wow, to what you just said. You know, what I want you to do is to also tell me, you know, this story and this experience that you've been on, this journey, has inspired you to live in purpose, right? You've owned your story. You are walking in purpose. So tell me, tell us, right? Break the strategy down again, and then tell us what your story has inspired you to do.
Definitely. So again, this is my working definition. When I started Googling what the definition of strategy was, I just did not like it. Mm. And when I don't like the definition, I say, okay, what does it mean to me?
Webster, you were wrong.
Yeah, Webster failed me on this one. it felt like it was always aiming at war, or it was always aiming at a business sense. And so to me, my definition is that strategy is a defined number of steps to help you obtain an objective breakthrough. And so in that, the idea is, when you talk about chess players, the most professional chess players, the master chess players, they can see 10 to 12 steps ahead. And the idea would be, if I want to accomplish X, Y, Z, what are the necessary steps to get there? And there goes strategy. Where oftentimes we confuse strategy with a plan. And that's not really what it is, right? You can have a goal of saying, okay, I wanna eat healthy. Okay, what does that look like? Well, it looks like me eating green things and red things. And okay, fantastic. What is the strategy to help you do this?
Well, I'm gonna wake up early.
Exactly, the actual defined number. Now, again, we have to pull it back, because oftentimes we say, well, Jimmy did it this way. I don't care about Jimmy. You know, I'm talking about you. I'm talking about where are you at right now? You
know, that should be on a t-shirt. Okay. Well, Jimmy did it this way. I don't care about Jimmy. Yeah. That's good.
Shout out to Jimmy.
wherever you are.
But understanding where we are is so crucial to be able to set a real strategy and say, okay, these are the necessary steps. And it may take me, you know, a little longer than others, but again, we're not comparing ourselves to others. And so that's where, to me, strategy comes in. And in that, you know, a couple of years ago, early on the pandemic, which is 2 years now, but early on, I started seeing individuals on Facebook that were posting about things that they would like to do. And I think the pandemic allowed a moment of understanding life is only here for just a moment. And if we don't act now, then when will we act? If we don't take action now, when will we take action? And I had a friend of mine who was writing on Facebook, and she wrote this question. She wrote, what reaches more people, a blog or a podcast? And I responded to it. And I said, listen, you can do both if you are really strategic on this. And of course, that led to a private conversation, which led me down this road of helping her put in a strategy to launch her podcast. Her podcast has become highly successful. It's The Voice of Tamar. And she herself has been able to go other places and speak and impact other people. A powerful story. But that moment was not just pivotal for her. In sharing her story, it was pivotal for me in realizing, wait a minute, I can tap into this and help other individuals implement a strategy, which without knowing it at the age of 15, that was being put in me, that was being understood, because I was being taken in this road where I was becoming a leader in the church, which also parlayed to being leadership outside of church. And everybody that I would train would have promotion, would have growth. And it wasn't until I had that relationship, that encounter with Vanessa, that I said, oh, wait a minute, there's something here that I really need to lean into. It was at that point that I started Miguel LeBron Coaching. It was at that point that I started blogging. And then last year we started the podcast Strategy Rewind.
That is amazing. It's so powerful to get to hear those moments, those pivotal moments, right? Those kind of aha moments where God goes like, this is it, right? Like, it's always been in you, right? But it takes that moment. One last question. I guess, you know, one of the things that come to my mind when I hear that for you was, you know, did you experience any apprehension or fear in launching Strategy Rewind or LeBron Coaching?
Sure. You know, my biggest fear was launching the website miguellebron.com. That was my biggest trepidation, because I knew I wanted to do that. Yeah. I knew that was going to be a way for me to share in writing, share in whatever content form I could. Mm-hmm. So to me, step one was putting out the website. And I remember that I searched where I would do the hosting, that I searched different websites to have an idea how would I design it, because I designed my own website. And I remember sitting there before the computer and just looking at the screen and looking at the prices and looking at all this information that for weeks I had compiled. And my wife looks at me and she says, now, when are you going to do it? And I say, mind your business. Right. You know, it was that moment I was like, I don't know. I want to do it. I know that it's the next step. But to be honest, I was fearful of what of was Was it something that people were going to visit? Was it something people were going to be interested in? Because okay, if I could help someone one-on-one, but now it's expanding, and were people going to be interested? And so when I launched MiguelLeBron.com and I began to see the numbers of, oh, people are visiting. Oh, people are hanging out on the website. Oh, people are sharing my content. Mm. That really gave me the courage and gave me just the strength to say, oh, wait a minute. If they like this, they're going to love this. And yeah. So doing the blog and doing videos and doing the podcast, it was almost like it was just the next step. I didn't even really think about it, although there was some thinking about it. I mean it in the sense where I didn't second guess, sure. Is this the right move? I just knew everybody who's engaging with this content and sharing, I know they're going to like this because it's in line with what I've been doing.
Yes.
So while there wasn't any trepidation towards launching Strategy Rewind, doing MiguelLeBron.com, definitely there was.
There was. And I asked you that question. Thank you for sharing that. I asked you that question because I think, you know, it's so common for us to feel like this is what we're supposed to be doing, or to see something that we believe that we're supposed to be leaning into. But, you know, then take those emotions and almost allow them to cause some doubt. Well, is this really what I'm supposed to be doing? When in reality, no, you know, there is some anticipation and nervousness and fear. It is normal. And that's what takes courage, is to be able to not push past those emotions, but to truly kind of sit with them and say this, you know, to feel them, to experience them, and to then say, well, I'm going to push through this so that I can
I mentioned, those emotions aren't bad, right? So understanding, hey, I feel afraid, or I feel nervous, or I feel concerned. Okay, now that I know that I feel that way, what am I going to do with that? Because that nervousness isn't bad,
no,
but I can't live there, so what do I do next? And so being able to understand, okay, it isn't bad that I'm feeling this way, really helps to say, okay, it's not bad, but it's just not the ideal state to be in.
Yes.
What is next?
Yes. How can I move past? I love that. Thank you so much. So tell me right before we have you share where people can find you. So what's next? What's next in your dream and in your strategy?
What is next? Well, actually, this year, my wife and I are entering into a brand new stage. We're actually launching a church.
Wow, so, that's huge.
Yeah. So I've been working for 13 years in various ministries, or for over 13 years. But in the last 13 years, I've been working in a ministry literally that started from a house church to now a church that has developed leaders and helped many individuals. Wow. And I've served as the associate pastor for that ministry for that long. And so after really just meditating and praying on that, my wife and I said, okay, this is the year. And I said, all right, this is the year.
Wow.
Yeah. So this year we are launching a church, Grace Hope Fellowship. We actually started doing online classes at the beginning of this month in March, and our first in-person service will be April 17th. So it's something
that's amazing.
Yeah. It's something that we've been praying on, meditating on. So, you know, it's very interesting to see how all of the things on a personal level, how they've really moved me forward with regards to what is my God-given purpose. And to me, in my personal life, I have established pillars, and I would suggest that for everyone. And to me, there are five pillars in my life. You know, number one is to honor God. And I look to honor God with, you know, my time, my attention. I honor God with everything he's given me. And number two is to love on my family, because I come from a broken home. And so to me, it's so important to love on my family. Number three for me is really to just go ahead and leave a legacy. And so when I work on things, I try to figure out, how do they encompass these pillars, and is it one of them or is it all of them? And so to me, this next stage in my life, it covers all of these pillars, and it's so powerful to just see the strength in community. As you mentioned, we're not meant to do this alone. So wherever you are in your spiritual journey, I would just say tap into your God-given ability, tap into your God-given purpose, because it is there that you'll find it so much easy to serve. It is easy to just be you. And really, it's those things that come easy for you to do that you'll be able to do when you just tap into that. So leadership strategy and all of those things, while it may seem overwhelming for others, for me, it's where I'm meant to be. That's my sandbox, so to speak, because that's destiny.
I love it, Miguel. Thank you so much. It was so powerful to hear your story and to really be able to see how you've been inspired to live a life of purpose and calling, and how these moments in your story really moved you to be where you are today. And now, you know, getting ready to launch a church. So we're going to be praying over this for you, because I know, being in ministry with my husband for a long time, I know it is not for the faint of heart. So we are praying over you and your family.
Thank you.
We know that God will bless it. Thank you for tuning in. We'll see you for next week's episode. If you were inspired by today's story, make sure to follow, rate, and review this podcast. To watch the full live show, head over to Leilani Langdon on YouTube, and don't forget to subscribe. And remember, purpose is found in knowing, owning, and sharing your story. So the question is, are you ready to share yours?